The Volume.
Jenkins and Jones is presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. There's no better place to make every moment more than with FanDuel. There's lots of reasons we love betting on FanDuel Sportsbook. You've got great odds and markets for the MLB, NBA, NHL, and so much more. They've got awesome new and existing user promotions. It's America's number one sportsbook. It's easy to use, safe and secure, and you get your winnings fast. It's also fun to combine multiple bets from the same game into a same game parlay. Discover the most popular same game parlays each day right when you log in. And FanDuel Sportsbook is now live in Ontario, Canada. If you're new, just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app to get started now. Sign up with promo code JANJ so they know we sent you. That's J-A-N-D-J. Disclaimer, must be 21 and over and present in Arizona, Colorado, Connecticut, Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Louisiana, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, or Wyoming. Gambling problem, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Welcome to Jenkins and Jones on the Volume Podcast Network. It's Monday, April 11th, and it's our playoff preview episode. We cannot fucking wait. I'm so excited. So are my good friends who are here with me, the hosts of Jenkins and Jones, Dragonfly Jones, a.k.a. Tyler, future Twitter board member.
Future Twitter board member.
How's it going, guys?
I'm going to make it. I started the movement.
I ain't never going to join that shit.
Tyler won't go because it. Tyler's not going to go because it won't pay anything, but I'm trying to start the movement on Twitter to get you and Fat Kid Deals put on the board. You guys are the two MVPs of fucking Twitter.
Give me some decision-making capabilities here.
And LeJethro Jenkins, a.k.a. John.
What's up, Bubba's? Pardon my upper lip. This motherfucker looking long as hell, bro. We got a little too happy with them clippers. Thinned out the beard too much. This upper lip looking twice as long this morning.
Sheesh. John spent Saturday in Long Beach with me, and he went home so intimidated by my facial hair that he just took a fucking hedge clippers to his own face.
Just gave up. I said, fuck it. It's never going to work.
bro went to the barber and asked for the Republican and shit. Asked for the
boot. You don't have niggas call me Republican again, bro.
My bad.
You don't make
man.
Me fight
Sorry,
somebody,
man.
Dog. Shit.
Before we start talking about the playoffs, it has been brought to my attention, and I have to bring this up to y'all because this is absolutely fucking crazy to me. I want the two of you to think back to the first episode of Jenkins and Jones you recorded. I believe you both say you were so nervous you had to get drunk just to try and like intro the podcast. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. This is the 250th episode of the Jenkins and Jones podcast.
I mean, consider how long we've been doing it. It's not that many.
Yeah, it's okay. So 250 weeks is about 4 years, right?
Right. About so we five took years. 3 years
five
off.
Years.
Of,
yeah, 5 years, and we started recording in 2015, so 7 years ago. So we've done about 5 years of work in 7 years.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Hell yeah,
is it?
Well, the volume has turned the rate of podcasts
and that's what I'm saying. Let's consider that we do it twice a week too. So we might have been sitting on like 3 years worth of pods in like 5 years when we first kicked off or some shit. Like I don't fucking know.
And we took off the times we should have. You feel me? Yeah. Who was pretty Old outside? We was like, we'll do it next week.
You feel me? Fuck it.
Right. I would put it like this: 250 episodes of the pod, 120 something of them have been with the volume in the last year, so the other 120 were in the 6 years prior.
Okay, so 120 episodes in 6 years. So we did 2 years of work in 6 years before we got the bag, basically.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Hell yeah, that's the way to do it. I regret nothing. We fucking slacked our way off into the motherfucking bag, the American dream, man.
Let's talk about the playoffs.
Playoffs.
It's play-in week, but the playoff matchups are basically set. The Lakers and the Nuggets are going to overtime as we speak, which I find that to be the funniest thing that's happened in basketball this year.
Go home, LA. You know, go like, home, dog.
You know what the world needs more of? Austin Reeves triple-double overtime watch against the Nuggies.
You know what was wild? Bron on fucking April Fool's, like, I'm not playing for the rest of the season. And then, like, 5 days later, he stopped playing for the rest of the season. Bro. Come on, G. Sheesh.
I was about to come out of pocket to try and take Vinny to a late home Lakers game, and I'm glad as hell that I decided to wait and see how that shit played out, because I would have been sick if I spent a couple $100 on Lakers tickets to see whom. Austin Reeves.
I don't know.
Respectfully, put up 40.
Respectfully. All right, let's talk about these play-ins. We are going to help explain the play-in format. I feel like last year we had a lot of people who were just tweeting at me or us saying, "What the fuck is happening?" So as follows, it goes like this: on Tuesday, the 7-seeded Nets are hosting the 8-seeded Cavs in the East. The winner of that game is the 7-seed in the East. They will play against the Celtics. The loser of that game will play the winner of Wednesday's Hawks and Hornets game.
Hornets, yeah.
I wrote Hawks down twice. Start over, nigga. I wrote Hawks down twice. Hawks and Hornets game. So the winner of that game will play the loser of Cavs Nets, and the winner of that game, which will take place on Friday, will be the 8-seed and will play the Heat. It is admittedly a little bit complicated. I think it makes more sense if you're looking at the numbers. In the West, on Tuesday, the Clippers are playing the Wolves, and the winner of that game will be the 7-seed and play the Grizzlies. The loser of that game will play the winner of Spurs-Pelicans on Friday, and the winner of that game becomes the 8-seed and will play the Suns. If the Clippers win against the Wolves, and the Clippers are riding an 11... I'm going to tell you this, as a longtime not-taker seriously of the Clippers, this is the most seriously I've taken the Clippers in a minute. They're riding an 11-game win streak into the playoffs. They are getting healthier every single game. I think if they beat that Wolves team to get the 7-seed, that Clippers Grizzly series is going to be fucking gnarly. I don't know.
Yeah. If they had Kawhi, I'd have the Clippers winning that series.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's, you know, shouts to Ty Lue, man. Like, you know, Ty Lue, the job he's done keeping that team afloat without KG without motherfucking PG and Kawhi, you know, for this season. And, you know, PG just recently came back and he kept that team afloat. He got them in a position, you know, to get into the playoffs now. And you know, they're going up against this young, you know, untested Grizzly squad. And, you know, Ty Lue is a great fucking coach, a master adjuster. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to make Memphis sweat. It might even go 7, but like I said, I just don't see him pulling it off without Kawhi, man.
You think they beat the Wolves to get the Grizzlies?
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
John,
for
you think
sure.
So?
Yeah, definitely. Ty Lue was great in game. You know what I'm saying? It was crazy that the Lakers had a chance and we offered them fucking 3 years. And now with a nigga that we're offering the job to other people prior, or talking about the job, the other people getting the job prior to even firing this motherfucker, bro. You feel what I'm saying? Like, come on, bro. I don't know if he could have done anything with this, you know, when we got Westbrook.
There's a world where Ty Lue was coaching DeMar DeRozan, Braun, and AD on the Lakers this year. Yeah. And I like that. I would like to live in that world.
But now we are in the projects. You feel me? Game one of the season, 10 games in. You know what I mean? But yeah, I think the Clippers are good. But like Tyler said, without Kawhi, I don't really truly trust them. That Grizzlies team, I don't think they're for play. And we saw what what's your boy name?
Ja?
You know what I'm talking about? You said what?
Ja Morant?
Yeah, Ja.
Ja Morant?
This is the weird high, bro.
I was so flabbergasted that he forgot Ja's name.
We saw what Ja did last year in the playoffs, too, so they ain't for play, G. They gonna be solid.
Golly. I think Tuesday, I'm so excited for the Cavs-Nets game. I don't know. What do you think? How do you guys feel about the Nets? How do you feel, Tyler?
You know, the Cavs are, we've talked before about having the Cavs might be the most unappreciated team in the league this season. I still have the Nets winning that. I think the Cavs could fuck around and, you know, get to that 8 seed though. You know, but the way I look at it is like, it's a no lose for me, regardless of who gets that 8 seed, because we're either getting Trey,
yeah,
LaMelo, or Darius, right? Like, I love all three of those dudes. You know what I mean? So either way that shakes out, it's totally fine with me.
I want the Nets to pull it out. for me to say they'll win the East and they don't even make the motherfucking playoffs, I can't take that type of L, G. You feel me? But I think the next, I think the Nets pull it out, G.
You think they'll win on Tuesday, though, right? You think they win in the, you think they get the 7 seed, right? You think they beat the,
man. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like you said, 48 minutes, we're going to play 48 minutes of Kyrie and KD, G. Come on, man.
So that East, I mean, it really is going to be from the second round in that it gets super exciting. But even the first round, you look at, we got Sixers Raptors with Doc Rivers. Did you see the Doc Rivers presser tonight?
That motherfucker got a little spicy. Hey, I tell you what, he would not have talked to me like that. Not Doc motherfucking Rivers asking me, do I understand how coach works? Motherfucker, do you understand how coach works? Right? We have seen your resume, motherfucker. You wouldn't have been talking to me like that, dog. I promise you. You'd have said some shit to me like, well, do you understand what I'm saying? I'd be like, yes, I understand, coach. I still don't understand how you let Josh Smith, bounce you the fuck out of here in 2015, but I understand what you're saying now, coach. He would not have got spicy with me like that. I promise you, dog.
He had the nerve to say, and I'm normally like, you know, you're in a press conference, you know, you don't get into like a fucking back and forth really, but he had the nerve to say to that reporter, I'm going to say it really slowly so everyone can understand.
Ooh, like, get the fuck me out. Like that.
Who are you talking to right now, bro? I promise. Listen, I'm better at my job than you are. Yours. I fucking promise.
No, I have never been one to give a fuck about my job more than I give a shit about like being respected in situations like that. Like, there are so many times I have, like, you know, put my job on the line because I refuse to let a motherfucker talk to me in that capacity. And if I was a reporter there, I'm not at all, you know, saying that reporter's soft or no dumb shit like that. You know, to each their own. But he wouldn't have talked to me like that, bro. We'd have had a little verbal back and forth right there, buddy. I tell you that.
He did also challenge him. Because what Doc was saying was our lineup is entirely reactive to what the opponent does, which is really a philosophy in basketball. That always works, not being completely passive and reactive to what the other team is doing, famously, right? it's like the Lakers. It's like the Lakers in winning time. They're like, everyone else is playing slow. That's what we should do, right? We should just make sure we're doing what everyone else is doing. But Doc, what he was saying was, no, we always go, you know, we always go small when the other team goes small. And all I saw was Sixers fans and writers responding to it going, this is not even true. And right. which is what the writer was challenging him. He was like, well, as of five games ago, that was not the strategy you were employing. And Doc was like, we have a whole staff of coaches, and I think they know a little more about basketball than you do.
Well, he might be coaching the Lakers next year. You know what I mean? We might be seeing more of that, man.
That would be, I don't
believe,
shit,
do y'all believe in the Sixers at all?
No.
You think they make it out? They could not make it out the first round.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
I legit think the Raptors might bounce them. They're a better coach team. They're a team. Mm-hmm. They're a more diverse offensive team. They're a team where, you know, of course, Pascal's the guy, but that offense flows through everybody. You know what I mean? So I would not be shocked if the Raptors bounce Philly first round. Hell no.
There's things I believe in the Sixers about. I believe that Doc Rivers is one of the great performance artists of our time, and I believe that he is still awake at 12:30 a.m. East Coast time trying to think of the funniest way to get bounced out of the playoffs. Like, I have faith that they will do that. You know what I mean? They'll be up 3-0 and up 20 points in the fourth quarter, and then they won't make another shot for the rest of the series. Like, it'll be something crazy. Like, I think this will be the supernova.
Yeah, and fucking Matisse can't play games 3 and 4 in Toronto because he's unvaccinated, which is funny as hell, because that's why Harden dipped, right? He dipped because, you know, Kyrie wasn't vaccinated, guys weren't committed to winning, and now you're dealing with this. You're dealing with perhaps, you know, the guy who's going to be, you know, assigned to Siakam, to their best player, and he's not going to be there for 2 home games for Toronto. Hey, I'm telling you, I would not be shocked.
And old Jimothy Harden and Glenn Rivers, maybe a little friction. I mean, this could be the Jenkins and Jones team of the playoffs. It could be the team we enjoy talking about the most this playoffs.
It could be delicious. I just want some end of season spicy comments like we got last year. Like, I wouldn't be throwing Harden under the bus. You know, like, Harden's just he's not good anymore. I don't know what to say. You know?
Are they keeping Doc if they blow this shit?
I think Harden doesn't like Doc, and that's,
so he's already gone. Yeah. He's already gone.
You think Harden? I wonder. I would love to see the Mean Girls text messages between Harden and Maury about Doc. You know what I mean?
I just don't feel like he appreciates me. I just
shut up.
I don't feel like he really cares about me. Like he just, you should have heard how he was talking to me in practice yesterday. Did you see what he said to the media about me?
Bucks Bulls, another series I'm super excited for. I think, you know, we're all high on the Bucks for sure, but even the first round East series, it's exciting. We talked about what the ones and the twos could look like versus the play-ins, but say the favorites win or say the Raptors beat the Sixers, the Heat, Celtics, the Bucks, and then the Sixers or the Raptors. I'm very excited about that shit, bro. A Celtics Bucks series in the semis in the East. Yeah. That's delicious.
I think the Bucks are going to beat the shit out the Bulls first round. I think that goes five, bro. Like
maybe.
Like we were so high on the Bulls at season start, but you know, difference a season makes. You know what I mean? So yeah,
Suns are the best team in the league, but it's the Bucks. I just feel like nobody's fucking with the Bucks right now. G, they got the best squad to me. I just don't see anybody really giving them trouble coming out the East.
But that's why I'm happy. Well, I don't know if I see anyone giving them trouble, but that's what I mean. They've had some incredible games against the other top teams in the conference so far this year. But I love them being in Chicago. I love there being, you know, it's going to be a crazy fucking crowd. This is what we talked about before the year about being excited to see the Bulls have the juke, kind of like the way the Knicks did last year. You knew the Knicks weren't going to win, you know, beyond where they went last year, but it's just so much fun to have that kind of juice back in the Garden. I feel the same way about the United. Is it still the United Center? Or is it the fucking crypto.com center?
No, I think it's United Center. It's still United Center. Yeah.
Thank God.
I think we said the Bulls are going to be 6-2. They shot out, you know, it was killing, you know what I mean? But they ended up where we said they're going
to
be.
Yeah, we knew the regression to the mean was going to be regressing to the meaning.
shit. There was a point early in the season, I was like, these motherfuckers might fuck around and make the ECF.
You feel me?
No, sir.
But yeah, not anymore, though.
Hey, Hoops fans, don't just watch all the NBA playoffs action. Be a part of it with FanDuel, an official partner of the NBA. Right now, all new customers get a risk-free first bet up to $1,000. Just place any bet on the NBA playoffs, and if you don't win, you'll get up to $1,000 back in site credit. There's so many reasons why we love FanDuel. The app is safe and easy to use. You get your winnings fast. There's tons of betting options, and they've got their same-game parlays. We've been talking about the playoffs, obviously, all episode. Lots of opinions on the playoffs. We've all got the Bucks to repeat. I think that would be our big line. And we've got the Suns coming out of the West as well. Download FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook today, using promo code JANJ. That's J-A-N-D-J. And place your risk-free first bet for a chance to take home a W on basketball's biggest stage. Remember to use promo code JANJ for this amazing offer. Disclaimer, must be 21 and over and present in select states only. First online real money wager only, $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable site credit that expires 14 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Let's look at the West. John just mentioned, you know, it's really interesting. The Heat are the one seed in the East. The Sun are the one seed in the West. How much confidence do you have in those teams meeting in the finals? It just feels like the regular season means less and less every year. You know what I mean? I do like the Suns a lot more than I like the Heat as far as making the finals, but I don't know.
The Heat don't have a chance, bro. The Heat don't have a chance. Do you see anybody in the West beating the Suns for real?
I don't.
Not even nobody.
I mean, there was a part of us that thought that, you know, we would get the vintage Warriors, but that kind of hasn't happened, so I don't think anyone's really going to challenge the Suns.
I thought the Suns postseason were going to fall off this year, West. And I feel like they are better. They're, you know, they're a better squad. You know what I'm saying? They did the exact opposite of what I thought they were going to do. They're still going to lose. It's going to be the same ending. You know what I mean? But nobody's beating them in the West.
I'll be very excited to see. I would love to see them back in the finals. I love the energy of the crowd. I would love to see Chris Paul get a healthy playoffs. I would love that more than I would love to just get to watch Devin Booker work for the entire
playoffs. Booker, this playoffs is going to go crazy, though. I think he going to be different, bro. He got that taste, you know, he got that experience, and now he really going to go crazy. He already looks solid. He already had a solid playoffs. I think he's going to be different this playoffs. I'm tapping it into every game that they play.
Going down to the bottom of the first rounders, Mavs, Jazz. Luke, did you see the Luka injury today?
Yeah.
They're saying that they're optimistic that it's just a lower calf strain, but those are not three words you want to hear applied to your star player over the last couple of years in the playoffs. That has turned into some really shitty fucking circumstances. So hopefully he's good. The West playoffs needs Luka healthy. We need to be able to all collectively laugh at fucking Rudy Gobert in the first round of the playoffs and count the number of times.
We need those Gobert switches on Luka, please. For the love of God. Please give us those.
And I need a tracker for Donovan Mitchell passes to Rudy Gobert per game. I need a little counter in the corner.
Dog, did you see that stat that said, like, you know, he averages like 3.2 turnovers a game and 2.6 passes to Gobert a game.
Yes.
So he passes to the other team more than he passes to Gobert every game. Hey, that motherfucker's the Rodney Dangerfield of the NBA, bro. No respect, man. Not even from your own fucking teammates, man.
Does anybody rely on a player more than the Mavericks rely on Luka? Like, that's, you know, that's the one guy. Like, I think maybe, like, you know, Joker in Denver, what he's been doing has been insane. He has nobody there, but, you know, I think, like, dog, I you know, if Luka isn't 100%, it's a wrap for the MG. Especially in the playoffs, bro. We saw, you know, last year, I'm going to say rolled that man in the first round, you know.
If you ever listen to an interview with Mark Cuban, he talks about Luka differently than you will ever hear an owner talk about a player. You know what I mean? Yes, they are definitely more dependent on him. Warriors Nuggets, you guys, it sounds like, don't have a lot of confidence in the Warriors turn. I'm expecting a Warriors flip at some point. You think they ran out of time for that, John? That needed to happen a couple weeks ago.
They dealing with injuries coming into the playoffs, not playing good. We just saw Klay, you know, put up 40. He looks solid. You know what I mean? But I just don't see it this year. You know what I mean? It's been a totally different second half of the season. I just don't see it. These last few weeks have been rough. So I think the Nuggets
Nuggets get by him.
I think the Nuggets might get him out. You know what I'm saying? I think the Nuggets have a chance.
They have a chance.
Joker, what he's doing is fucking insane. So, like, I think they have a chance for sure.
So, Suns come. Go ahead, Tyler.
We got word that Michael Porter and Murray aren't coming back. So, I mean, I think it'll be a whole different series with those two. You know, I would probably be leaning towards Denver too. But I don't know. I still feel like, you know, fucking, you know, Draymond, Clay, and Steph are going to maybe figure this shit out. You know what I mean? Maybe go back to the trio of old and, you know, maybe they'll advance maybe to the Western Conference Finals if they do get that shit clicking. But I don't see them getting past Phoenix either way.
We just got word from Jackson. This is not a surprise to anyone, but Frank Vogel has coached, according to Woj, Frank Vogel's coach's final game for the Lakers, decision that's expected to be shared with him as soon as Monday. I think he knows, Woj.
Damn.
Lakers search expected to be lengthy and expansive with no clear initial front runner. I feel like that's directly them just trying to tell Woj, like, tell everyone we're not going to hire Doc Rivers.
This is going to be lengthy.
Right. It's going to be a while. I have no idea who the fuck coaches the Lakers next. Coaching Bron, you know, coaching Bron was never that appealing because you knew you were always at his mercy in regards to your job security. But coaching this Bron was kind of, you know what I mean, one or two more peak seasons left at the most. Like, I don't know. It's going to be a tough sell, man. We'll see.
I'm struggling to even come up with a name that I would be excited to hear.
Fucking Twitter, Lakers Twitter did their Lakers Twitter shit today where they said there were talks with Nick Nurse. No, the fuck there weren't. Nick Nurse could fuck around and coach the Raptors for 20, 30 years.
Nick Nurse is not going to miss his statue unveiling in 20 years in Toronto to fucking get fired after 1 year with the Lakers.
Right. Hell no.
They were talking about Mike Brown and like Kurt Rambis and shit. I think Kurt Rambis has 40 fucking games under him and he's going to coach Bron. Yeah, right. You know what I mean? Mike Brown, we already saw how that went.
Brown Mike, as I like to call
Brown
him.
Brown Mike.
Motherfucking brown as hell.
Dog, hella brown, dog. It's not going to happen.
So we've got the Suns coming out of the West. Is your consensus, Tyler, you agree with that?
Yeah. I guess I'm gonna be boring chalk guy, you know, finals repeat.
Suns, I think Bucks. In the West it makes sense. I mean, to be honest with you, my only just like gut feeling about them not coming is I am just one of those sports writers who is like cynical enough to believe that like history repeats itself and things are boring. Like, you know what I mean? I could just see someone tweak. I shouldn't talk about injuries or whatever. I could just see it not working out. You know what I mean? But I would love it. I love that their new tradition is dancing before games and not giving a fuck about their pregame warmup. Like, I love the energy. Like I said, I'll be rooting for Chris Paul for sure, especially since the Lakers aren't playing and I don't have to worry about him nut checking any players that I'm a fan of. Go Suns. So then on the East, do all three of us have the Bucks coming out?
Yeah, bro.
Year.
Ain't no use in trying to making up some shit and lie to ourselves. No,
for sure. I think the East playoffs are going to be great. I think it's one of those crazy things about basketball where in hindsight, everything like the narrative always looks so smooth, right? And you forget about those moments like watching Bulls games growing up. You forget how close they were to losing some of those games. Mm-hmm. You forget about like the Bucks felt so. Last year, them winning felt so inevitable. We talked about it throughout this year. It feels inevitable that this might be their era. And they were one half a fucking inch of Kevin Durant's shoe away from.
And Kevin Durant by himself, too, that series as well. That's crazy.
So that's the East to me. I just think the energy is going to be incredible. I don't know. I would lean to the Bucks too, but we'll see what happens, man. It's going to be interesting.
Do y'all think the Suns have more of a chance to win or less than last year?
I don't think that they will win the championship.
I think they have less of a chance of winning and they're a better team.
Yes.
I mean, we thought they were going to win that series last year. You know what I'm saying? It's just wild how basketball works. You know what I mean? Where you can be that much better and still, like, it depends on who's playing. You know what I'm saying? Like, just how the Bucks look and how that team operates, where everybody knows exactly what they need to do. I just don't. And then Giannis, and just having Giannis, the best player in basketball, in my opinion. You feel me? Like, what are you going to do?
His improvement this year negates an entire team's improvement.
Everybody
this
else
year.
In the court. You know what I'm saying? Now, regardless, Devin Booker could to turn into, you know, whoever the fuck. You know what I mean? And it's just like, what are you going to do with Giannis? Giannis is still there. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't see nobody doing shit with him for a few years.
And every playoffs he's come back since he's been in the league, and he has added an element of his game to overcome what the opposing defense was doing to him the previous playoffs. You know? And we've seen that the whole year. His comfort level shooting mid-range and pulling up. And
lost that hiccup in his shot. That motherfucker looking pure. Off the dribble like, all right, let's go play
money from money from the line, too. The hacks won't save you anymore. Like,
I think it was a game six. I think that game six changed shit. Bro, what? I mean, he was dealing with that pressure. Doesn't miss a free throw. What the fuck else pressure you need? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That'll calm you. You know, when you step to the line. You know what I mean? Come on.
Jackson, is the thing that we're doing this week been announced? Can we talk about that?
No.
It hasn't been paper. I'll just give a note to Jenkins and Jones fans. Our usual midweek episode will not be appearing in your podcast feed for the play-in week, but we will be doing something else that I think you'll be excited about. So stay tuned to this space for news about an upcoming bonanza. I don't know.
Oh, my God. Basketball bonanza. More basketball talk coming your way.
Then we'll have another podcast out. The pod will be back next week. But before we get out of here, we do just have to talk. We have to talk music for a couple minutes, and I'm very excited about this. I was locked in, first of all, to start 20 years ago. I thought I was locked into a month straight of doing nothing but listening to the new Vince Staple album. And all of a sudden, John just randomly tweeted about the fucking Smashing Pumpkins, who I loved back in the day. And I don't think I have thought about in like 2 or 3 years.
That's what's so weird is they were so fucking good. And not like, dude, tonight and fucking 1979, those were like, to me, they crossed over in the same way that like Teen Spirit did. We're like, I could put aside my not listening to white music to listen to that white music because that shit was fire and was undeniable. You know what I'm saying? So like, I'm listening to Tonight, and like you said, when them drums speed up, I'm literally emotional, bro. I'm singing up to the ceiling.
You know what I mean? Like, it just, it's such a good song, and we never talk about that. We never talk about it. And they had some fucking slaps. It's crazy.
It's a beautiful song, and it makes me, it always made me emotional, even as a kid when I heard it, right?
Captivating.
That
video still, didn't hurt either, man. That video was like...
Perfect fucking video. Perfect. All-time video. Like, that video won MTV Video of the Year Award. I vividly remember that shit. Back when that shit was a big deal. When getting that Moon Man was, right. You know, you were certified when you won that motherfucker. And that video won that shit. Yeah. But yeah, it's just a beautiful fucking song. You know, I was huge on that Melancholy album. I'm going to tell you how I got hip to it. Shouts to all the art teachers out there who let their kids play music while they're working, because I was in an art class and a kid I was classmates with was playing that album. I was like, oh my God, this is fucking amazing. And I asked him if I could borrow it, and he let me borrow it. And I dubbed it, you know, for all the people under 30 years old who don't know what that means. I had a CD player and a fucking cassette deck on the same stereo. And I,
hell yeah.
You know, yeah, and I played the fucking CD, and I recorded on a cassette, and I had that album on cassette off of that. And I love that fucking Melancholy and then Infinite Sadness album. And Tonight Tonight is a beautiful song, because it's like, the thing about that song is that tomorrow looms over that song in kind of a melancholy way, right? Where it's like, to enjoy the moment you're in now. Enjoy tonight, because tomorrow isn't going to be as good. You know what I mean?
Right.
And then when you go back to that, when you listen to it now as an adult, and, you know, when you first heard it as a kid, you were like, yeah, those motherfuckers were right. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Lots of times shit does not get better as you get older and all, or what have you. But it's a beautiful fucking song. It's a beautiful album, man. And it sucks that Billy Corgan is like an alt-right shithead now, because he was like the quintessential
90s. Is that
90s.
True?
Dog, him and Alex Jones are BFFs, bro. But yeah, he was like the ultimate 90s dude, right? Like, he was the fucking... The front man of a fucking, you could say, a Mount Rushmore 90s rock group, right? Like, yeah. He was fucking in a love triangle with Courtney Love and Kurt Cobain, you know, where they were, where him and Kurt were competing for Courtney Love's affection. He was fucking best friends with Dennis Rodman. That motherfucker was 90s as hell. He was like a definitive 90s guy. You know what I mean? And I hate that he's a fucking dickhead now, but... You know, tonight, and now look at him tomorrow. You know, I guess I don't know.
He
saw the future.
That like locks in perfectly with my feeling about it. Smashing Pumpkins was like maybe the last thing that my dad and I both liked. Mm-hmm. Like, music was always like even when he was like living with us and we still had like a relationship or whatever, music was always a big fight, because he was hugely into music. And so he'd hear me listening to Oasis and he'd like bust into my fucking room and be like, this is the Beatles song they stole that chord progression from. You know what I mean? Like, that's who he was. He was like, you know, he knew all the history of everything. He was like enormously into guitar players and all this other shit. And I remember he bought me that album. Like, we were listening to I think we heard 1979 on K-Rock, which was a big rock, the alternative station out here. And I was like listening to it, and he was looking at me like, oh shit, he's listening to something that I approve of. And he bought me, it was a double album, Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness. It was a double album, which I had at the time, I didn't know that was that existed. Like two CDs in one pack. It was like unbelievable. Yeah. And yeah, exactly as you described it, like, they're the number one band for me of all time for making me feel like I'm gonna cry with songs where I could not tell you what the lyrics are like half the time. It's just the sentiment of the music and like the phrasing of the lyrics. And then like when you do catch a line, it'll be like, God is empty just like me. But Billy Corgan was like, but put the most beautiful viola line ever underneath that shit.
and I love Billy Corgan's voice, because it's like he goes from like Angel to like Bobcat Goldthwait, and like one line he'll be like,
be with me tonight.
I was like, I love that shit, right? Like, it's a one-of-one voice, man. And like I said, man, I just hate the dickhead that he is now, because I love that dude back in the day, bro.
Yeah.
I was holding Somi, like, listen to the song on repeat in I think it was a Saturday morning, because it was a Friday when I, like, had, like, the whole universe aligned, and I had
Friday
the fucking
night,
best night ever.
You tapped
Jesus
into the flow
Christ.
Of the ethereal.
But
right? But I'm holding Somi, and it's like, believe in me, believe in you, and I just like fucking, you know what I mean? Like,
hey, that's
bro,
shit
just
in the chest,
Saki
bro.
In the face, like, and why are those drums so good?
It's my favorite drum song ever. Yes.
Why does, bro, God tier? I'm like, what in these? I've never had drums like make me feel the way the drums in that song do. Where it like, when it speeds up, it literally, my heart skips a beat.
Right.
It's weird. It sounds so corny, but it's true. I swear. It's weird. Jeez. It's such a beautiful song. Such a beautiful song.
Shouts to that album. Cuba DeLocke followed by Galapagos. That's like my favorite fucking, you know, sequence on the whole album. And it's beautiful fucking music.
Tyler, I've always appreciated your musical taste because I feel like you grew up in Long Beach, even though you didn't grow up in Long Beach, and that you really listened to every, like, to everything. I remember when we were first starting to get to know each other, and you mentioned you were a big Sublime fan, and I was like, "Oh, you're a big Sublime fan?" And you're like, "Look at the location on my Twitter bio."
Yes, exactly. 40 ounces of freedom,
that's
baby.
Crazy. But that's like, and you know, if you read anything Bradley Nowell ever said, like that's what the musical, you know, zeitgeist in Long Beach always was, because there's so many different kinds of people. It's like the white kids went to funk concerts with the OG, you know what I mean? With like George mm-hmm. Clinton would just play at the park or whatever. Like, so it just had that mix. I always appreciated that it was like, you were a black kid in Richmond listening to Smashing Pumpkins in your fucking art class. Like, I love that. Yeah, it was.
and the thing is like, it kind of goes back to how fucking influential MTV was. You know what I mean? And I guess the internet has replaced that, but it was different back then, bro. Like
it hasn't replaced it. You know, yeah. Someone just put up a TRL top 10 or whatever. And it was like, look at how everyone used to listen to so many different kinds of music. And it was like across so many different cultures. But every 16-year-old heard that 30 minutes of music every week. Right. You know what I mean? We don't have that anymore.
Like, do you remember how good it would feel when you were like, you would fall asleep to MTV and then you would hear a song that you never heard before that just woke you up out of sleep, like, what the fuck mm-hmm. is this? You know what I mean? And then you lock in and you're like, oh my God, this song is fucking amazing. Like, I don't know if kids are experiencing that anymore. But damn sure not with MTV, with fucking that ridiculousness marathon shit that they got going on. But yeah, it was
Jesus
a different time,
Christ.
Man.
Is that the only show that they still have?
It's like 26 hours a day. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I remember like listening to like Not a Surf. Was it Not a Surf popular? Like MTV had me listening to like the weirdest shit. You feel what I'm saying? But like,
yeah, Not a Surf.
Yeah, man. That was. I remember the moment I heard Teen Spirit. I remember that moment. You know what I mean? I remember like looking at this like, what the? I never felt that feeling before. It was the first time I'd felt that feeling listening to the music when that song came on in MTV.
So you had MTV as like the big, like the end of the factory, like the biggest thing you could do. But then the other thing that was amazing growing up in Southern California is we had Power 106 for rap, and then we had K-Rock for white person music. And so you would get, just on a random Friday on either one of those, you would hear something that only you were hearing in Southern California, and a month later, it would be all over fucking MTV. But like on K-Rock, they'd have No Doubt. We like, they're like, here's a tape someone just handed us. Like, this Gwen Stefani can really sing, you know? Like, but you know, it's like Weezer and No Doubt and Sublime and those bands you'd hear way before everyone else. And then all of the West Coast rappers would just bring shit to Power 106 when they finished it. Like, here, throw this up. You know what I mean? Like whatever else. You just Ice Cube or Snoop would literally just be on Big Boy in the morning, like you're driving to school, and they're just like, hey, I have something new next week. I'm going to bring it by. Like, it was so special. And now, you know, everyone has Apple Music and Spotify. It's like you get what you get. You get what the algorithm tells you you'll fucking like.
I still think I find more music because of these new apps and shit, though. You know what I mean? Like, I think my taste is actually expanded because I don't have a radio telling me, you know, what's cool and what isn't. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of the shit I fuck with, you know, like, I don't know. But I think even in the South, like, we would have shit. Like, it was like the country shit that we would hear that, like, 6 weeks, 3 months before, you know what I mean, anybody else fucked with it.
You know what I mean? I think that's really reasonable. And it wasn't like Ice Cube, though, and fucking Snoop Dogg. You know what I mean? It was more underground.
The radio dudes, model made more sense if you lived in New York or California or Southern California than it did if you lived in the other 98% of the country, for fucking sure. So good for everyone who doesn't live in those places, I guess, that we get shit.
Did you ever catch on the shit like 25 lighters and shit? Did that catch on the West Coast?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. Like, because I remember we were talking about like some Texas rap and shit, and then like it never made it to the West Coast, but it was huge as fuck in the South.
Because everything was so regional at that time, like Power 106 was for sure, like they would apologetically play rap music from other areas. You know what I mean? But right, it was like, right, we got enough shit out here. Like, and that's why I always tell you guys, like, I didn't understand until I was much older, because I never read like magazines about music or anything. I didn't understand until I was like in my mid-20s that fucking Daz Dillinger was less famous than Ice Cube. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's just like Corrupt and DJ Quick is like those, they were on the radio as much as any rapper from outside of Southern California would be on the radio. You know?
We was talking about Tila. I think it was Tila. We was talking about Tila. Yeah. That motherfucker, you know what I'm saying? He was so, I'm so tired of ball. Like that shit was,
yeah, that was the
too
shit.
Many, you know what I'm saying? Like, dog, that shit went crazy. Like, he was a superstar to me. You know what I'm saying? Being country, but like, you know, he never made it to West, probably didn't make it to the East Coast either. It's just regional. He had that pocket where, you know what I'm saying, we just thought he was it. You feel me?
Yeah. I miss regionalism, especially in rap. I think that, you know, of course, there's a lot of whack shit that came with regionalism. There was, you know, media bias where, you know, you weren't going to see, you know, UGK on the cover of The Source or whatever have you. Or, you know, you weren't going to see a fucking, you know, 8-Ball and MJG video on MTV. You know what I mean? But it was a really diversified sound back when there was regionalism. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like fucking, like, you know, New York had the crisp snares, you know what I mean? Fucking down South had the 808s, you know, West Coast had the high-pitched synths, you know, fucking Midwest had the rapid flow. It was, you know, it was a distinct sound. It was a diverse soundscape. And, you know, like I said, I'm glad that, you know, people have acknowledged other regions, that other regions have gotten their respect, but It feels like now the regionalism has kind of, the lack of regionalism has diluted the sound of the game. Like, you think about
West Coast music is still West Coast music though. Like you'll hear like drill artists in like New York, which that's Chicago music. You feel me? Like that's, you know, that's weird. Or like, you know what I'm saying? Like ASAP was pulling from, you know, Houston and 3-6 and all them. You feel me? But for like, to me, like the West Coast artists, like when I listen to like, you know, even Vince, who just dropped this shit, yeah, as musically like elevated as it is, it's still a very West Coast album. You feel what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. But I feel like that was a bit of a renaissance in like the last 10 years of the West Coast going back to the West Coast of sound. You know what I mean?
Like when Kendrick making more, you know what I'm saying, West Coast shit. Yeah. Like Schoolboy and all them.
Because I do think the apps and the streaming platforms removed the regionalism, but also the access to technology to make beats and to do your own production and stuff removed that too. And I know Chris Crack talked to us about that. We've talked to, I've interviewed rappers in Long Beach who talked about that. It's like MySpace did more to change music, maybe even than like Apple or Spotify did, just because it was like you could fool around and do something and just immediately put it out, which just, it didn't exist. Like before, like if you were in LA and someone you knew had pissed off someone that Big Boy knew, you didn't exist. You were never going to get on the radio if he didn't fuck with you. You know what I mean? So it removed that, but also everyone having the same production tools, like the West Coast, the G-Funk sound, that high synth sound, that came out of the technology that they had available to them. You know what I mean? Yeah. And now everyone has access to all the same technology. So there's no longer that like lineage of, well, this is what I heard and my grandparents played in a funk band and their parents were raised in the South. So we had, you know, because you could literally in Long Beach trace music back to this church, this black church by Polly. And that the family who did the music came from this place in Alabama, like during the Great Migration, you know, like,
sheesh.
It's just not that way anymore now, you know, like, but all the West Coast rappers, at least the ones that came out of Long Beach, they all grew up on music in the church. Like, Snoop, Nate Dogg was like, he's just a choir boy, you know what I, like literally. And it's just now, it's just, it's good in many ways.
I think that's most rappers, though. I think that's most, because the church is such a black experience, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I mean, it's just probably a little different as far as the sound, you know what I mean?
Right.
But
it's good that everyone has access to the technology and stuff, but I'm with Tyler. I miss the regionalism and shit a little bit too. But let's talk about the Vince album. I know we all wanted to talk about that. John, you had the best description I've heard anyone give about the album with your museum analogy.
I mean, it feels like something I need to experience in that space. Like it feels like it should be an immersive experience. You know, like I feel like I'm walking through his world or his brain while listening to the album. You know, like it seems extremely, you know, personal, and how he describes things, you start seeing it rather than hearing it. You know what I mean? So it made sense. I'm like, yo, like that Van Gogh joint, we need an immersive experience. And like you said, they knew that too, because this is really not a tour album. You know, his last two albums have been so emotional. You can see he's kind of struggling with certain things, you know, very personal. But I mean, it's beautiful music. And we had talked about how he had kind of lost us prior. But I was so confident in this album based upon what he did with the one prior. I'm like, this is just going to be, we all knew this was just going to be another step into that, in that direction. And he's really found his sound, man. Like it's he always had the lyrical shit, but the music didn't quite match up to me or didn't appeal to me. I always knew he could rap, but now he's like tapped in. The music is just beautiful, and the juxtaposition of like truly beautiful music and these very raw lyrics is special, you know? So I would love to, you know, get high as fuck, pull up and have that immersive experience, and, you know, have a, you know, be able to take a trip in, you know, visually in Vince's mind.
Yeah. It listening to this album, it makes me feel like, you know, there's certain times when you're listening to artists and you're like, okay, they found their pocket. You're like, okay, you know, this feels like the start of a second act that is going to be, you know, like historic. Like, it's like the, you know, listening to this album, you know, Ramona Parke Broke My Heart, you know, after it followed up Vince Staples, which is amazing too. It's like, it gave me like the same feel when I heard like Pinata by Freddie Gibbs. Like, okay.
Exactly,
you know,
this, the same feel, bro.
It's like, okay, this is a new lane that he's in, and this is his lane. You know what I mean? It's that type of feel. And I'm someone, I've been riding with Vince for shit, 10, 12 years. Like, I was fucking with him back when he was, you know, when I just knew him from Odd Future features and shit.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then, of
Earl
course,
and Mac Miller, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And then Summertime 06 hit summer of 2015, and that shit stayed in rotation. I love that fucking album. But, you know, like I said, like he lost me a bit with like Big Fish and, you know, FM. It felt like he was trying to, you know, appeal to the masses. And I'm not at all knocking the man. If that was the path he wanted to take on his career, so be it. But I always felt like Vince was at his best being introspective, you know, welcoming us into his world. Now when he's trying to branch out and be a bigger star to the world, you know what I mean? And these two albums have just been so, you know, he is just, you know, immersing us in his world, you know, immersing us in Long Beach, immersing us in how he grew up in Long Beach in these two albums. And it's beautiful. And like I said, it feels like it's the start of a really remarkable second act in his career for me.
I co-sign all of that. I am going to be going back from listening to the Smashing Pumpkins for the last two nights to listening to Ramona Parke Broke My Heart probably
tonight,
for the next month. So.
Tonight. Believe in me.
That's all the time we got for the show. Believe tonight. Tonight. We will be back. Like I said, the pod will be back next Monday. But stay tuned. We're doing some other shit this week that we'll be telling you about. That'll be rolled out soon. So stay tuned and see y'all soon.
It's not papered yet.
Playoffs.
It's not papered.
Be papered soon.
Bye.
Bye.